Me too is called katajak. In English, you may have heard it to be as throat singing. Those were the exact sounds that my grandmother started teaching to me at a very young age. It's a form of song very unique to Inuit and known to be only by Inuit, but it is also compared to the Mongolian style of singing called duva. It's different though. Katajak is commonly known to be between two women facing each other, holding each other's arms. And this is because when one woman makes a sound, her partner in front of her makes the exact same sound, but just half a second after. And then they both create music with imitations, like sounds of birds, or dog sleds, even mosquitoes. And it has to be in rhythm, but of sounds that we hear in our Arctic environment. And it's also very comical to make all these sounds in front of another person. So it makes you laugh. If you can imagine, just more than 50 years ago, this was a way to board beat'em. It was a competition between two women to see who begins to start laughing first. And so in my case, I was a baby. I was on my grandmother's back in her ulipakak, and that's a shawl-like baby carrier that my Anansiak Mini would put me to sleep in. And she would walk around with me on her back and swaying back and forth. And these were the sounds of nature, but they were also lullabies, and it sure put us to sleep. These days, though, not only Inuit women sing them, and not only are they lullabies. Many Inuit have told me that the album that I put out a long time ago, Tujut, it helped restore this form of throat singing, this form of our singing that was banned when Christianity was introduced to the camps of our grandparents before they were all moved to communities. And so throat singing apparently was the music of evil, according to the church or the Christians that came up to our communities, to our homelands. And so as such, Inuit women stopped creating these beautiful natural sounds. My guest today explains how he learned the throat songs from his own grandmother and describes how an elder from Puvernituk in Nunavik brought the revival of katajak back into our lives, and that was in the 1960s. Going back to my grandmother, she had 7 daughters and then me. Of those daughters, only Auntie Dora and Rangi learned this form of our culture from Anansiak. And then there was me. After being relocated to the high Arctic in the 1950s from her homelands in Inukjuaq, Nunavik, my grandmother Minnie used to entertain tourists and those heading to the North Pole from Resolute Bay, where my family was moved to. And that was her way of making time pass, because we have very long, dark winters up there, 24 hours of darkness for months. And when the sunshine came and the tourists came, that's when Mini Alakirelak showed all those visitors what throat singing was. My cousin Robbie has done many things in his life. However, most recently, he is a director from the Office of the Commissioner of Indigenous Languages over in Ottawa. Robbie joins me today, and first we'll talk about throat singing, because Robbie is one of a very few Inuit men who can actually throat sing, and it sounds very beautiful, and it's very unique to the throat songs you may hear from Inuit women. Anitsarauna tungasutisimmiyavullumi katatchasunguaralu nimigami anansiahar nimigami katatchasuming taktsumani pingat tusarnilarittu arnai katatchasugut lugit suusuunek sautillugit takkoa angutisuummimata tanna katatchasitialummiyo ullumi pulaartigisimmiyavut Taima Tunga Shukti Taoli, please welcome Robbie Watt to Words and Culture.
Thank you very much. Great intro. I feel welcomed already.
You've done so many things in your life, but I just, before we get into the topic of the work that you do in Ottawa, I want to get our listeners to know you a little bit and things that not everyone may know, but in this conversations around words and culture, as Inuit, I'm going back to the time I recall meeting you at the first ever throat singing conference in Pouvelmito, Nunavik, northern Quebec. And it was a very special time, and you were standing there and you recognized an elder. Do you remember this? I'm taking you back quite a number of years.
Yes, that was a time when Avatak hosted a gathering of throat singers from all across Canada. I don't think we had everyone there, but we had invited close to around 50 to 60 participants to have our first ever throat singing gathering to try and get organized, because, you know, throat singing is quite unique within our culture, and we wanted to kind of find ways to safeguard it, make sure that there is ways to support our throat singers, find ways to network, maybe have this throat singing ability to be transferred adequately within our younger generations, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why we were there was back in the 50s and 60s, it was that gentleman that we were honoring, his name was Isaac Bekoalo, for bringing back throat singing. He retaught his daughters how to throat sing back in the 1950s. And that's how throat singing is thriving today.
So it's such an incredible story. And I think the revitalization of throat singing is very, it's out there. It's whatever we did to preserve throat singing, I think everyone who did that work deserves recognition, because we have young people mixing throat singing through all genres, and people around the world can identify throat singing and relate it to Inuit. I just want you to share your experience with throat singing and your ability to throat sing, because mostly Inuit women have throat sing, but you are like, nope, my grandma taught me too, and I love it.
Well, my mom's from the Inuit, from the Hudson Coast region. My dad's from Kudrak, which is from the Angava Coast. So most summers, we'd spent summer in Inuit / around the Hudson Coast area. And during that summer, I always had an opportunity to go hunting with my grandfather, Adatia. One time at Adatia, I was around maybe 6 or 7, my Adatia dropped me off at this old lady's camp. And he left. I think he was going to go to Inuit for a couple of days, get food, come back. And I was brought to this old lady's camp to babysit. And in the evenings, in the morning, she'd walk along the shoreline looking for driftwood. And she'd be making this sound. And just really, I was like enthralled, like I wanted to hear more and more. And I started trying, and secretly. And in Kutruk, when I get back, I'd be kind of like a reporter. Sammy Arnatuk, we called him Chicken Sam, had a radio station, an FM radio station in Kutruk. So I said, I have a story to tell you. And so I would tell him about this sound that I was hearing, throat singing sound. And so he'd let me, well, I want to hear it, Robbie, I want to hear it. So at throat singing town. And that's how it started. And the following year, I learned a little bit more. So I went back to the FM station and see what I learned more. And then I had a little brother that was old enough that I could teach. So there was a, what you call a True North concert that was going to be taking place. And we were asked if we could perform there. So I taught Billy how to throat sing. He was a bit shorter than I am. So he had a milk box that he stood on so that we could be more eye to eye level. And that's how it was. Billy was probably a much better throat singer than I was. But yeah, that's how my story is with throat singing.
It's amazing. I remember seeing that video and just being amazed because I grew up listening to my grandmother and her throat singing with my aunties, but I had never seen two young men throat singing. And the sounds were so beautiful and very deep. Do you still throat sing today?
Of course I do. But riding a bicycle, once you learn how to ride a bike, you can never unlearn. So what a silly question to ask.
I'm sorry.
And when someone says, can you demonstrate for us? I will always gladly say, sure. I am just very alone here. A couple of times I have actually, when I was a student in Winnipeg, when I used to be asked to go to teach throat singing, but I didn't have a partner. So what I do is I record myself first with a tape recorder, and I use that as my partner.
That's amazing. Well, I'm not going to pass this up, but can you demonstrate the sounds that you learned from the old lady and the camp that you worked up on?
So there's this basic one that she would be doing. Stuff like that.
Even you have the original sound where the original throat singers, the women from Inukjuaq and Puvernitok specifically, they were fast. It's very different today. You find that too?
Some of them are faster in some songs, like the Hemigulovic. Some of them go really, really fast in the West Central Arctic more. I love any kind of throat singing.
Me too.
Contemporary, traditional. I think there's space for everyone to be able to feel that they are demonstrating some form of throat singing. Some traditionalists do not appreciate, that are too contemporary, maybe too visual. Throat singing could be looked at something a bit too sensual sometimes. Especially with the sounds that it makes. But when a performer uses those gestures, it really can turn off a group of people that just don't want to have throat singing associated with that kind of. So, you know, there's space for everything. And I think a key is just to accept the fact that there is different ways for expression and there is no right way. As long as we just respect each other's space. Throat singing is, he's got a lot of, it's not just Inuit that throat singing. There's different types of throat singing too that are occurring. There's the Tuvok throat singing. There's the Mongolian throat singing that is also in place. And it's not just, in those cultures, they're mainly men versus us where it's said that it's only for women, but how can that be when a man, like Isaac, brought back throat singing? So I think being very gender specific can also alienate or prevent people like myself to want to throat sing. Like I don't really find myself out there trying to demonstrate throat singing, knowing the fact that some people think it's only for women.
What can you say about how far Isa's work and throat singing today, amidst all the frustration or the back and forth of who should and who shouldn't. I really like what you said. How do you feel about the world now knowing, because there are a lot of people who identify particularly our type of throat singing as Inuit, to Inuit culture, and what has it done for us?
Well, I give big time kudos to Tanya. I really, really, really think that she really kind of went against the current and did what she wanted to do without any fear. I mean, I'm sure that she was getting a lot of, but when I hear her, I just stand up and I want to hear more. She's great. She's wild. She's been awarded and recognized nationally and internationally, and good for her. And we need more people like that. And I think there is space for everyone to flourish. I really, really, a couple of times even people that are from the church, from our churches in the north, have come and said, we would really like to see if there's a way that we could kind of blend in throat singing with our songs, with our church songs.
Really?
Yeah, so I've always said, you know, there's space for everything.
Mm-hmm. Can you help our listeners who might not be familiar with the history and the importance of the resurgence of our culture through throat singing, why it was important to bring back? Say, can you help them understand what happened?
So, language, culture, identity, it all relates to identity. And what I have learned is that there are some young people that have lost their language. And are very, very, they're aching to know more about their culture, wanting to have their identity be affirmed that we are Inuit. And some of them have found ways of getting that feeling back through learning how to throat sing. It's not just throat singing, but it's their artistic expressions, the way they clothe, they would put it in their clothes, anything that shows their identity could be just as powerful as someone saying, well, I know my language. So I find that very important. It can bring way to healing going on any kind of journey, including a healing journey whereby you will eventually learn to take on the challenge of relearning your language.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about identity. It's all about who am I? Who am I in this world? And everyone wants to feel they belong. And sometimes, unfortunately, what happens is that lateral violence is very rampant. And no matter what kind of violence it is, lateral violence could be any form, and it could be towards anything. And unfortunately, it is even towards people who's more Inuk, who's less Inuk. And it could be all about the fact that you can't speak your language, so you're less Inuk now. I mean, those are the kind of dialogues that are unfortunately happening in our world.
Mm-hmm. It's so important to hear from someone like you say that, and I'm so glad you put it out there so that we face it, we identify it, we face it, and discuss it, because you're absolutely right. You and I, because we speak Inuktitut, are no better than our peers or our children that don't, correct?
There's about almost 9 billion Inuit people in the world now. Just in my world, where my first worldview, in northern Quebec, we're only 13,000 plus Inuit. When you expand it to the rest of Canada, we're only maybe around 60,000 Inuit. And then when you expand it to the circumpolar world, we're only about 100,000 Inuit. 170,000 versus 8.5 billion people in the world. We have a lot to offer. We have our culture, our way of life is part of this beautiful mosaic world that we live in. We're diverse. We bring diversity into this world. And why not just support each other to make sure that we are bringing this diversity and being proud of being Inuit.
You are listening to Words and Culture, Madeline Alekirel-Lawunga. My guest this week is with Robbie Watt. He is the director at the Office of the Commissioner of Indigenous Languages Office in Ottawa. I asked him this time how the work he's been doing has been going since the office first opened in June of 2023. Here's my conversation with Robbie.
There are 70 plus Indigenous languages in Canada as we speak. Not to mention other various dialects. That doesn't include the dialects. Of those, half of the Indigenous languages alone are in British Columbia. So some are struggling. Some have one or two speakers left in their whole nation. And they're trying to find ways definitely to try and make sure that they take advantage or take note that these two speakers that are left. So they're trying to come up with ways of what plan can we have, what is the best way to try and optimize what's left. Some are thriving. According to United Nations, no language is safe. All our languages are vulnerable, no matter what which language group you belong in. Even amongst us Inuit, we need to do a lot of research, and we want to do a lot of research. In particular, I'll give myself an example. I'm traveling to Kutruk, and I'm in town, just visually observing, noticing that many of my children, my less than five-year-old little children, toddlers, are only speaking in English. What's going on here? Their parents are speaking to them in Inuktitut, but they're only responding in English. And that's a concern. That's a big concern. We have daycare centers in every community. I know that in some daycare centers, in some communities, are all unilingual, Inuit. And because of that, a non-Inuk child going through this unilingual daycare center speaks Inuktitut. She can speak Inuktitut to anybody. And then you have daycare centers that, for some reason or the other, can't seem to have the capacity to have all Inuit workers. So it's not standardized. In some daycares are all more Inuit, some are less Inuit. And that's having an impact. What kind of impact will that have in the future? Even though we say that 90% of us adults speak Inuktitut, what's going to happen? So I think we need to do a lot of research, a lot more research, be open to help, maybe find indicators as to how we could maneuver around and strategize on ensuring that we don't lose our language. We know that there's a lot of technology, lots of TikTok, YouTube, all that stuff is very much at the fingertips of every child. We don't have enough of these programmings in place, Inuktitut programmings. Television also is all English or French. But I have to say that this is a dialogue that has been going on since I was a kid, you know. Our parents have been worried about us losing our language. And now it's us that's worried. And I think it's good to continue being worried, I think, because if we become complacent and just not worry anymore, it just takes 1 to 2 generations to lose a language. But we have to do a lot of research. We have to do a lot of promoting. We have to make rest of Canada know about our languages. I'm making sure right now to make sure that the office that we've created here in Ottawa is relevant. It's relevant to the communities that are speaking the Indigenous languages, that is there to support in any way. If they want to do some research, we're there to help. If they want to promote their languages, we're there to help. If they want to complain, and there's a process we've created. If, for example, if you did get funding from the federal government for any language programs and there's some kind of a dispute, that we are kind of like the, unlike the ombudsman for the for between the Indigenous group and the government. And we also are supportive of innovative projects that are going to help in new ways of teaching or learning a language. The purpose of our office is to make sure that we are creating more people to speak their languages.
That's so good to hear. And thank you for sharing that information. They're amazing reminders, and that's what we need to keep pushing forward with to stay united as Inuit Ila.
That was Robbie Watt. Robbie is a director of the Commissioner of Indigenous Languages in Ottawa. Ani nagaluang mataila o kausia pivot pikusia pivullo o pinaganiat so uta waput sa pingnak to hangilagulo kanulima ang malusunalima at akiyak bihak suting na kung may ikaiti daw wakata kanutigi inuy at so sungun ni mga ata o kausia wilik kusivullo pichu tigit sugin na kung may Robbie. If you want to learn some Inuktitut or any of the other Indigenous languages featured here on Words and Culture, please visit our website at wordsandculture.ca. You can click on the Resources tab to check out some of our vocabulary builders. Sometimes English words just twist my tongue. Vocabulary. Now to twist your tongue, here are some words in Inuktitut that I'm going to leave you with to practice with. So in Inuktitut, when we greet each other, specifically, mostly in Nunavik, when we say hello, we say ai. You say ai with a ah at the end of the word, ai. However, because Inuit are living all across the circumpolar Arctic and our dialects are different, in the Qikiqtaluk region, this would be in, if you look on the map on Baffin Island, they say Asuyutin, 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 Asuyutin. That translates to, well, here you are. I love our language. I'm Madeline Alakarelak. Ale anak to khalang maleu khaus tinik pitu ti khare amik inu ge mi lupi go supunga. I am very proud to be Inuk, and I am very proud to be able to share with you my interviews relating to our Inuktitut language. Until next time, inu khatikai atsunai.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kako utau. We'll see you again.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
you someone or know of someone who is affected by vision loss? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind. From technology training to public awareness to, most importantly, peer support, these are just a few services they offer to help their members achieve their full potential. Come see how we can raise their potential more by visiting ccbbcyukon.com.